Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host here, and we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waving for the video portion of our show, retired FBI Jim Orr. He likes to be called Mr. James Orr, just for people that don't know him real well. And thanks for being on the show, Jim. Appreciate it. He lets me call him Jim. We've also got Marlon, the IA guy, Marachi, retired sergeant from LAPD. He's got a lot going on. And the IA guy podcast as well. Maybe a lot of you guys probably know him from that as well. So thanks for being on the show, gentlemen. A shout out to our sponsors, our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. Thanks to them. I believe that we're on the seventh wink of satellite radio right now. GunLearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.life, and Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. Thanks to them, we're streaming to about 1.5 million followers right now. And Two Bells, they built their new online store at leoroundtable.com. A shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press at tampafp.com, and Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and also lawofficer.com. Thanks to all those entities for helping make the show happen. And now, what in the world are we talking about today? We've got some pretty good stories, guys. First one, now look, the first story, it's a little bit deeper. It's a main story. Officers sue to compel Congress to install a January 6th riot memorial at the Capitol. But there's more to the story. And it's a Fox 59 story, Fox59.com. I thought it was an AP, but it's not. But there is more to the story if you just look deep enough. And we're going to cover that. Then we've got Michigan State police troopers. They vote no confidence in their leadership. Then we got a general inspector clears a state trooper in the shooting of Maxon Nowak. We've got a Houston officer shoots and kills an armed suspect after confrontation at a traffic stop or traffic crash site. We got body cam shows Salt Lake police shooting and killing an armed guy who broke into his ex-wife's home. Titusville officer released body cam in the shooting death of a 25-year-old who went to go for a gun. And then that's never advisable. Then finally, double stabbing and arson suspect fatally shot by Prince George deputy. So assuming that we have time to get to these, that's the order pretty much that we're going to be covering these things in. So officers sued to compel Congress to install a January 6th riot memorial at the Capitol. And, let's see, this is the, I see the photo was an AP photo. I'm showing Fox59.com, but I'm also seeing the credentials say AP Associated Press. So I think this is an AP article, guys, and judging by the way it's written, I suspect that it is. So we have two police officers who defended the U.S. Capitol from a, now here's for the first flag. When you have a story, and now we have a lot more information about the debacle at the Capitol on January the 6th, right? So they say that these guys, these two cops, they defended the U.S. Capitol from a mob of Trump supporters. So there you go, because now we know that there were FBI plants. There were agitators that were purposely put in there by the government to agitate and to get it to go in this direction. So we're aware of a lot more information now than we used to be. So the first flag of this lawsuit, but these guys filed a lawsuit on Thursday seeking to compel Congress to follow one of its own laws and install a memorial to the January 6, 2021 attack. Now the officers, and there's just two officers, and we're going to get more into their background in a second, but they claim the failure to install the memorial plaque. So it was, I don't know if it's really a memorial or a memorial plaque, but they say the failure to install the plaque on the Capitol reflects an effort by President Donald Trump and his congressional allies, his friends, to rewrite the history of the January 6th riot, second big flag. So they're wanting to preserve the thing on the attack and how Trump's responsible for all the stuff. And here's a quote saying, even those who recognize the violence of the day eventually partnered with the man who both inspired and minimized it, the suit says. They're talking about Trump. More than 100 law enforcement officers were injured in the attack. Hundreds of people were convicted of the Capitol riot-related crimes. But Trump erased all of the cases in a sweeping act of clemency on his first day back in the White House. So they're acting like they have an issue with him getting the guys out of jail that have been in prison while they were trying to put Trump in prison, too. In 2022, Congress passed a law directing the architect of the Capitol. There's a guy that holds that job. They wanted him to install a memorial honoring the officers who tried to hold off the mob. The deadline for the officers holding off the mob, I guess that does not include the officers that were giving tours of the Capitol to the other half of the rioters that were coming in and being welcomed with open arms, I guess. I don't know how they're going to pull that argument off. But the deadline expired about 2 years ago, they say. And in April, the architect of the Capitol, Thomas Austin, told a House subcommittee that House Speaker Mike Johnson had not instructed him to install the plaque. The Speaker is responsible, according to this article, for any modifications to the House side of the Capitol. Now, it says that spokespeople for Austin's office and Johnson did not respond to emails looking for comment. The lawsuit plaintiffs are Metropolitan Police Officer Daniel Hodges and a former Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn. They've been outspoken critics of Republicans' revisionist history of January 6th. In other words, our version of what happened. So it already tells you that these guys are the naysayers, right? It goes on to say that both men live with psychic injuries. I'm not just making that up. That's what the article says, psychic injuries. So it's not saying physical injuries. These are injuries in their head from that day, compounded by their government's refusal to recognize their service. After Hodges was nearly crushed in a door frame during a battle for control of a tunnel entrance, rioters, they ripped off his gas mask and dislodged his helmet. So it doesn't say he has any physical injuries from that. It says that they ripped off his gas mask and dislodged his helmet, and that he has, you know, some issues dealing with that, whether mental, emotional, whatever. Officer Dunn left the Capitol, the other officer, before running an unsuccessful campaign for a House seat in Maryland last year, losing in the Democratic primary. So he's a Democrat. That should explain some stuff. Officer Dunn, who is black, said rioters yelled racial slurs at him during the siege. So nothing about an injury. He got some verbal insults about his race. Guys filing a lawsuit now. Officer Hodges and Officer Dunn joined Representative Jamie Raskin in the Maryland Democrats' office on Thursday to discuss the memorial and their lawsuits. They're on the Democrat side on this one. Now, the guy they're meeting with, Raskin, he led Trump's impeachment over the insurrection, and he thanked them for taking their campaign to court. So that's what we have with the article. There's a lot to unravel this. Not that I want to spend all day on this topic, but any commentary on this, guys, or any questions, any surprises on this? I thought it was interesting that they wanted the guys that are fighting for this memorial. Look, I have no issue with a memorial or a plaque, but the guys that are pushing it, it's not like they had, at least according to the article, it's all they call it psychic injuries, but these are injuries that resulted from either people calling their names or pulling a gas mask off their head in their helmet. These are injuries. I mean, I've been in fights with bad guys where worse things have happened. It just wasn't a compelling article, other than it sounded like some Democrats that happened to be cops that wanted to slam the Republicans. I don't know what the stall is with this memorial or with this plaque being installed. I'm sure that there's an explanation, whether we like it or not. It doesn't concern me much, but I hate to see these slanted articles, and you can see it from a mile away, and just want to make people that read this stuff, that they're fully aware of all the information and look at the sources, you know, for the article as well. So there's no commentary on this. Let's jump to our next one here. We're going to go into Jim Orr's neck of the woods here, and that's Michigan, Fox17Online.com. Michigan State police troopers, they vote no confidence in leadership. So we're in Kent County, Michigan. Michigan State Police troopers overwhelmingly voted no confidence in its current leadership, according to the union. So on Saturday, State Representative Mike Mueller, and he's getting in this, posted on a social media page that 98% voted no confidence in Colonel James Grady and a lieutenant colonel by the name of Amy Brimacombe, and in their leadership. Now, in the memorandum dated June the 7th, the Michigan State Police Troopers Association, that's the union, they shared what they sent out a little over 1,500 ballots, and almost 1,200 were returned. Now, 18 people voted in confidence, and 1,167 did not. That's overwhelming. Wow. So it says around 1,150 troopers are working across the state, and 1,860 enlisted members in the Michigan State Police, according to the state agency. So Rep. Mueller shared that the governor, Gretchen Whitmore, should replace these two individuals that the men and women of the agency have spoken. And it says that, well, here's a quote, "The MSP, Michigan State Police ship is sinking, providing everything I laid out in the House Oversight Committee to be true." And it did say that the agency itself shared their support for Colonel Grady's leadership, one of the two people that they did not have a vote of confidence for. But listen to how I was directed. Michigan State Police, so this is the agency. It said, "Director Colonel James Grady II and his leadership team provide unwavering support to department members. They're proud of the public safety services delivered every day to the public and our law enforcement partners across the state." So what it's basically saying is that the agency and the leadership team that work alongside the colonel They're supporting him, but the men and women that work underneath them are not. So that's the nuts and bolts of this thing. Jim from Michigan, any surprises here? Any inside scoop on this?
Well, I was a police officer in Michigan prior to joining the FBI. And, you know, I worked and knew Michigan State Police troopers. And at that time, certainly it was a very professional organization, well-respected. And when I look at 98% of the troopers voting no confidence, that's an overwhelming amount with very high participation, very few non-votes. So, you know, where the smoke, there's fire. There's got to be some serious issues to have 98% of your workforce voting no confidence to the leadership. So I would have to disagree with the position of the agency that everything's hunky-dory here. Obviously, it isn't. You don't get that many troopers voting no confidence without some serious issues, and it doesn't sound like they're trying to explore those issues.
Yeah, I read another statement, Marlon, where the governor's backing up the agency. It looks like the governor doesn't want to make any changes either.
Yeah, look, it's just to kind of add to what my colleague here is saying, Jim, is, you know what, this is a it's a culture issue more than anything, right? I mean, if you're going to get 98%, 94%, over 90% of the rank and file to say, you know what, we don't want this chief at all, vote no confidence, it has to do with a lot of what I think about is the culture, for sure. One, two, there's probably nepotism going on, favoritism. What's the other buzzword we use also is influence peddling. So whenever there's some disciplinary issues.
Hold that thought, Marilyn. Commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys. It's time to talk about our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com. And, you know, as police officers, we all know that we can buy our gear from a lot of different places, especially when we go online. But I want to remind everybody about the importance of supporting the companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that does that better than Gauls at Gauls.com. Even their motto is proud to serve those who serve, which of course they do in spectacular fashion. And they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations like this radio show. So when you're looking for gear, please consider supporting our title sponsor and go to Gauls at Gauls.com. And for the loyal listeners of the show, they're going to do you one better. They're going to give you a radio code. It's Radio15. And with that code, you can automatically get 15% off your next purchase. That is good until June the 30th at Gauls.com. Again, Radio15 is the code. And they have gift cards. We give away two every week on the show. Hook up your family, friends, and loved ones with a new Gauls gift card, and they'll be your new best friends. And remember that website, Gauls.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by retired FBI agent Jim Orr and Sergeant Marlon Marachi, the IA guy, retired sergeant from LAPD. We were just talking about we've just popped over to Michigan State Police, and there was a vote of no confidence. You know, that state has never been the same since Jim Orr left and went, you know, to the FBI. And this is a direct result of that. I think everybody watching the show knows that. But I'm having fun, of course. Marlon was just talking about it being a cultural issue involving law enforcement. So Marlon, the floor is yours.
Yeah, you know what? Just like my colleague Jim said, you know, and not everything is hunky dory. And yeah, we should hold Jim accountable for leaving the state of Michigan to the feds. Look, whenever you have such a disproportionate amount of people saying, hey, we don't want you here as a chief, right? As the leader, it's got to be some internal issues more than anything, right? Culture, nepotism, favoritism, influence peddling, maybe promotions weren't really fair. They were very biased. It's just a host of issues for everybody to gather up and say, you know what? We have to let the people know that this is not the person for us to lead at this department. So yeah, I'm with Jim. There's gotta be a reason. I'm going to call, you know, the fact that the AG that said, hey, you know what? Nothing, everything is okay over here. I'm going to have to push, you know, the button and say, that's not true.
I saw that you made a little FCC adjustment in your verbiage there, so I appreciate that. I can see you working for. I got to find a substitute word,
So people got to push that button sure to say that, you know what? Let's not make sure that we be accurate, right? We got to be transparent, and 90+% of the people are saying, we don't want this person to be our leader. That's pretty true and accurate. That's my take.
You know, I was going to double check and see how many, because you know the letter supporting the two people that had the vote of no confidence, it said that they had, you know, their command staff. So I'll bet you that all the ASIC, remember, there were 98% of the people that voted no confidence. So I'll bet you the 2%, yeah. I bet they were all command staff that work alongside the colonel. I can almost guarantee you, you know. So, people have, even civilians got to understand, you know, law enforcement, we're paramilitary. You've got to have the backing of the people that you work for. If you don't, if the rank and file don't feel like they have support, and if there's that kind of, it's kind of like living in a dysfunctional family. If you know, you just, there's all kinds of, they're in for a world of hurt. If they don't correct this problem and do it fast, there's going to be some huge things coming down, and I'm talking about things that are going to be libelous for that agency. And they've had that warning. The union's given them the warning, and now it's up to the people in charge and like the governor to make sure they follow through and make the changes in order to preserve the integrity of the agency. If they don't do that, shame on them. And you know, when we have a follow-up story and they didn't do it, and there's stuff that comes down because of that, I'm going to have Jim and Marlon back on the show, and we're going to remind them that we talked about this and we predicted this if they don't fix the problem. So, yeah.
Yeah. If I may add also is decisions like this, you know, take some time. It takes progress. It's not something that you do overnight. You know, you have to really get the association on board, really have a lot of meetings, a lot of confer to make everybody understand that, look, this is the direction that we're going as it relates to our leadership, and let's make this decision. But to your point, you're right. Time is of the essence to get something done and get a really good leader, because you're right. It can get more toxic than it already is. And so I just kind of wanted to make sure that the public knows that dissensions like this are very serious. You got to have, I would say, probably a substantial amount of participation and evidence to say, okay, you know what? This is a direction that we're going. We don't want this person as a leader. What's your take? So,
you know, Marlon, you should start your own podcast. Call it something like the IA guy or something. What do you think? I mean, can you tell people about your show, how they can find it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on YouTube channel. We're heading in the right direction. 1.2 million views and almost at a year and a half. I know I'm super, super blessed, super stoked. We really talk about these internal issues. I always felt that if we're going to be transparent, like we claim that we are, that buzzword with the public about police functions, well, discipline in internal affairs is a function that's just not talked about enough. And so in the YouTube channel, I invite a lot of guests to say, hey, you want transparency about things that happen inside, how we're treated, how the penalty is recommended, and just, hey, look what I went through. And let me tell you about this process, how it became punishment as opposed to the penalty. And so we have all these really good conversations, and check it on the YouTube channel. And I'm on Instagram on the IA Guy podcast. So thanks, Chip. I appreciate the shout out.
Well, hey, I'm glad that YouTube has been more gentle and kinder to you than to me. So there's a success story right there. Guys, if you're ready, we have some stories with video components, and look for our Audible audience, you know, podcast radio station. We'll describe in great detail what's going on so that you guys don't feel like you're missing out on anything. But if we cover a video that you absolutely have to see, and there may be one or two of those in today's list of stories, all you have to do is go to our Rumble channel the very next day. And our Rumble channel is Leo Roundtable, the name of our show, or you can just type in Law Enforcement Talk Show. And the very next day at 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern Time, our producer will take a special version, a copy of the live show. He'll embed every video that we talk about as we talk about it. Pictures of the good guys and bad guys pop up as we talk about them. So again, that's on our the Leo Roundtable Rumble channel the very next day. That's Tuesday through Saturday at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. So on this story, Rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter, General Inspector Clear State Trooper in the shooting of a bad guy named Maxim Nowak.
Listen,
drop the fucking taser!
Come on. Put the knife down, and I will put my taser down.
Okay.
Okay?
Put them down.
Shots fired. Start an ambulance. Put the knife down. Put that away.
So in this one, and I've got not a lot of time to go through the whole thing. I'm going to go through as much as I can. We're in Bolton, Connecticut. State trooper was justified in shooting an armed man in Bolton, according to the Office of Inspector General. The Inspector General Office, they released the report on Monday, and it detailed this case where a 29-year-old named Maxim Nowak was being shot. Now, we're going to get into the nuts and bolts of the story in just 1 second. But it's a wild, in fact, we had two stories back to back that are going to be wild. And I think that Marlon's going to be all over this one. So, guys, it's time for our commercial break. We will be right back. All right, guys. You know, in today's world, protection goes beyond physical safety, and it's about safeguarding those that are on the front lines from what we call hidden threats. And that's where MyTech, which is the Division of Compliant Technologies, comes in. Now, MyTech actually provides advanced protective solutions that are designed for law enforcement, corrections, and first responders. They're Eagle Protect nitrile gloves. They offer 4-hour fentanyl and xylene protection, giving you peace of mind in high-risk environments. Plus, their MyShield disinfectants and sanitizers actually eliminate 99.9% of germs, bacteria, and viruses, and that is done on contact. Plus, they continue the kill for up to 28 days, if you can imagine that, helping you stay protected both on and off duty. When safety is non-negotiable, trust MyTech to deliver the protection that you need. You can learn more about how to equip your team today by simply going to compliantechnologies.com/MyTech. Again, compliantechnologies.com/MyTech, because the best defense starts with the right protection. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at bluethegold.com. If you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to bluethegold.com. They translate search and seizure doctrines into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to. Plus, they give the training for free thanks to bluethegold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up this week, actually, probable cause deep dive. It is on June the 18th. And that you can get there by signing up at bluethegold.com today. Join thousands of your peers at Blue and step up your legal game, because frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. Bluethegold.com. Welcome back, Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. You know, during the commercial break, we're having some good discourse among ourselves and some of our viewers as well. Betty Dunn got your message. I'm just not going to say that on the air, but no, we appreciate it. There's nothing wrong with making bourbon balls tomorrow, though. So, So what do you think? Do you think that she actually freezes bourbon into like round ice cubes? Is that what she's doing? Or do you think she's just using, what do you think she actually is doing there when she says she's making bourbon balls tomorrow? Or do I even want to know? Do I even want to go there?
Yeah, let's pass on that one.
We'll pass on that one. We are live satellite radio, so we don't want to take any chances. So, all right, here we go. You know, we left off talking about a story with the video components. Let me just refresh the memory. General, and look, for people just logging in, we're a law enforcement talk show. I'm Chip the Block. I'm your host, and we're joined by former FBI Jim Orr and former LAPD Sergeant Marlon Meraci, that has the IA Guy podcast. We're talking about General Inspector clearing a state trooper in the shooting of a bad guy named Maxim Nowak. And we're at, this is actually in Connecticut, and a state trooper was justified in the shooting of an armed man in Bolton, according to the Office of Inspector General. This bad guy was 29 years old. Maxim Nowak was his name. So the state police respond to a mental health incident. It's on March the 1st, 2024, so a little over a year ago. It's 2:30 in the middle of the afternoon. The Inspector General said that the Connecticut State Police trooper, Brian Contenta, he fired his duty pistol multiple times at our bad guy, Maxim, injuring him in the hands, chest, and abdomen. So I was amazed that the bad guy survived the shooting, but he got hit in the hands, the chest, and the abdomen. So he was like a multi, you know, the guy lit him up, right? So on that day, yeah. Troopers are notified by a mobile crisis center. There's a guy at a house in Bolton who possessed a knife and he wanted to harm himself, or they call it self-harm. Now the trooper, Contenta, along with another trooper, Wendy Garcia Campos, and trooper Douglas Bernier. So we got three troopers there that respond to the home and they encounter a bad guy that was holding two knives and he's in the kitchen area. I will admit that I had to watch this numerous times, because when I watched the video. Now look, I mean, when you're not there and you're watching video, there's just something about being the guy, right? I mean, and I don't mean the IA guy. I mean the guy, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of things we just miss. So when you watch things in real time, which I always recommend doing just to see what you're able to get. And then if they have the opportunity, go back to that slow motion freeze frames and you pick up a lot more. But when you're the cop that's there, your mind, God's built these bodies fantastically, and our mind has a tendency to slow things down, and we see and hear things and smell things that are just very hard to pick up on camera. So it's really a very interesting one. So The mother and father are in the house. The bad guy's holding a knife in each hand. And the article says the troopers issue verbal commands, engage in de-escalation tactics in an attempt to get our bad guy to drop the knives. And this is according to the Inspector General's office. He refuses to drop the knives. And they say that he made a move with a knife in one of his hands that was indicative of a throwing maneuver. And that trooper contested fired his weapon. And Bernier, the trooper that had the taser, fired a taser. Our bad guy falls down on the ground in the kitchen screaming. But remember, he lives. He gets hit multiple places. And he was transported to the Hartford Hospital for further treatment. So he survives. I have, you know, show notes on this thing. But I think that pretty much says it. I have to admit, though, that when it said that the bad guy made a movement, I was unaware of it. Going back to the video, Marlon, I know you're going to start us off on this. I got to admit that the bad guy was in kind of an awkward position, you know, an angle. But I was focused on the knife that he clearly had in his right hand. I was not watching the left hand. And I didn't even realize that he had a knife in his left hand, to be honest with you. I'm just being completely honest. So I missed that. I didn't miss it just once. I watched it multiple times and missed it. When I go back and read the article, then I got to go back and say, acting like he's going to throw and then finally with the left hand, I saw what he did. And I thought, okay, now I see what they're talking about. But the knife he was holding in his right hand, it was elongated along the side of his hand. So it wasn't like he's holding it out. You know, he had it elongated. So unless you look closely, you know, the knife is actually in front of the skin along the palm of his hand and his wrist, just to put people with a verbal picture on that. Marlon, I'll let you take it from here. We got a little over 6 minutes before a third commercial break.
Yeah, so a couple of things stand out. Very good explanation, Chip. Right off the bat, let's talk IA, right? Because now that we know that the criminal portion of this incident is completely done and over with, they've been cleared, now comes the administrative portion. So a couple of things that stand out from just watching this, and it's a little bit disturbing watching, because you do have non-lethal, right? You have the officer right next to the lethal officer. He has the taser. Along with the officer who has lethal, they're right next to each other, right? And it seems as though is that the shooting officer, right, the lethal, the officer that's responsible lethal, he has complete, I would say, command and control of the situation because he's given orders. He's kind of formulating a plan. He's telling them very, very good communications to let them know that, hey, please drop the knife. We're here to help you, et cetera, right? I know I'm paraphrasing. However, when he fires both of his lethal rounds, the non-lethal officer with the taser decides to deploy the darts. That's going to be an issue. That's going to be huge in terms of explaining yourself how you're going to be justifying those actions. Because to me, it looks like they deviated from, you know, the deployment of the taser. And the question is, can you articulate and explain why you did in both simultaneously? In other words, shots were fired. Next thing you know, here comes the darts. The other thing that stood out also is the fact that there's no supervisor at scene. As a matter of fact, he walks outside and he says, you know what, get a supervisor en route. If a sergeant is at scene, he or she is able to provide that command and control and formulate that plan and kind of guide the officers as to what to do. I think communication's great. There's a lot of explanation to do. I can tell you from experience, one of the allegations is going to be something along the lines like unauthorized use of a firearm, and the other one's going to be unauthorized or unlawful tactics. And they're going to have to explain if, in fact, you have enough preponderance, right? More likely than not, 51%, to say that your actions prior to you involving or engaging in deadly force were substantially deviated from department tactics, procedures, and so on. So there's a lot of explaining to do, and we can sit here and talk about it a lot, but just know that when you have non-lethal and lethal, and then all of a sudden they both deploy, you have a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you call those Me Toos, you know, where, you know, where you got one guy, you know, you got a line of cops and one dude pulls the trigger. There's a good likelihood that maybe not everybody, but yeah, there's a contagious factor that you're going to have other guys. You're going to have some sympathetic gunfire going on.
And I'm no one to pass judgment to say that way, hey, it's a good shoot or not. Look, it's a good shoot. Look, if you're going to go into your compelled administrative interview, it's a good shoot. However, and you have to explain yourself.
So let me ask you something, Marlon, and I know you're getting ready to roll on this too, Jim. If the And I just for, you know, the guy in his left hand, he was holding a knife, and he was kind of flicking it with his hand, like, but in a circular motion. And after I saw him do that, I don't know that I necessarily would have thought that he was going to throw it. But when that was used as a justification for the shoot, in my mind, I could see, okay, I could see how that would look like maybe he maybe a throwing motion where he could actually generate, you know, that thing to go airborne from doing a flick like that with a knife. So do you have an issue if the cop, if you believe that the cop actually thought that the guy was going to throw the knife, do you have an issue with the use of force, the deadly force in that particular situation? Marlon?
Okay. I was going to have Jim chime in. You know what, Chip? One of the hardest things to do is put yourself in the shoes of the officer when they decide to engage in deadly force. What I will say is that to him, right, it felt like a threat, right? It was necessary and it was reasonable for me to use lethal force because then he has to explain himself. There's has to be a lot of explanation on behalf of the officer, right?
Right.
Now, we all know that it doesn't meet the standard of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, which is great. And that does pose a threat. But the more important picture of this whole incident is you are dealing with some that it's going through a mental episode. Do respond to mental wellness calls. We have talked about tactical disengagement. You know, what are the circumstances for you to just to walk away and say, okay, look, you know what? We're just not going to do anything. We're going to stick around, but we're just not going to act. The other thing too also is who creates the exigency? That's huge. Did the officer create the exigency, or to your point, Chip, by making the motions of the knife and having this fluid motion towards him where the officer believed that it was a threat in his perception, that could actually create the exigency on behalf of the suspect as opposed to the officer. So there's lot to, you know, unpack. So anyways, there's a lot to unpack. Jim?
Yeah, we have what's called the 21-foot rule, right? Where, you know, if you're within 21 feet of a person with a knife, they pose an immediate threat in that they can stab you before you can draw and fire. However, in this situation, they're probably well within 21 feet, but we had one officer with his firearm pointed at him.
All right, hold that thought, Jim. Commercial break number 3. We'll be right back. All right, guys. You know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and even disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and even police departments nationwide. Now, if you're listening to the show and you have your own agency, your chief or sheriff, the founder, Dan O'Kelly's got a deal for you. You can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. You can go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Again, that is GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by retired FBI agent Jim Orr, retired LAPD Sergeant Marlon Meraci. He's also has the IA Guy podcast. We've been talking about a use of force, I believe Connecticut, if I'm not mistaken, guys, and this cop showed up. It was a residence. It's a guy in a mental crisis. He has a knife in each hand. Mom and dad are in the house. We haven't really talked about that component of it. One of them, their face was dithered. I'm embarrassed to say I don't really know whether it was the man or the woman, but I do know the other one was elsewhere in the house. But to the right of the cops, there was an adult. One of the parents was there, but I don't know if anyone was in the kitchen. But they're mostly the cop. Has a lethal component, has his firearm out. He's given most of the commands, and the bad guy flicks a knife. He's got a knife in each hand, but with his left hand, he kind of does like a circular motion with it. And the cop interpreted that as a potential for the knife to be thrown at them, and he went lethal. But when he fired the lethal shots, which did not kill the bad guy, by the way, our cop that had the less lethal taser fired his probes as well. And so Marlon just went and we were talking about, he was talking about issues with that, the justification, especially for the taser guy. And Jim Orr was getting ready to break it down from his FBI, slant or take on this. So Jim Orr, can't wait to hear what you have to say, buddy.
Yeah, so as I was saying, we have the 21-foot rule, which says that if someone with a knife is within 21 feet of you, then you're in a situation where you're going to get stabbed, because that's how long it takes to draw and shoot a weapon. But in this case, although they were within that 21 feet, they had a firearm pointed directly at the suspect, and the suspect wasn't like directly threatening to stab them or running at them or anything like that. They had a taser pointed at them at the same time. So although I think it was a justifiable shoot, it did look like the guy was kind of flipping a knife in his left hand in an upward position, like he might've been ready to throw it. I think they did it backward. I think they should have deployed the taser. And if that wasn't effective, then you've got deadly force if the guy continues to pose a threat. But the taser probably would incapacitate him more quickly than the firearm. And then you got the firearm as a backup, you know, because we've all seen guys, they get shot and they just keep going like nothing happened. I haven't seen that too often with a taser. So I think it's a matter of, is a justifiable, legally justifiable shoot? I would say, yeah. Did they do everything optimally? Not necessarily. I mean, I've been in plenty of situations where I could have legally shot someone where I didn't, because being able to do so doesn't mean it's necessarily the right thing for you to do in that particular situation.
So let me point out, there are some things that we don't know. We don't know there is one missing adult, in that house, whether it was the mom or the dad. We could only see one off on the side where the cops are there. And it was very hard. It was a narrow doorway. We could see the bad guy, but that's about it. So from the guy from the cop of the taser's angle, not sure about the backdrop past him, but my take would be that if you're a cop, I mean, they could have gone less lethal before that, but I don't know, you know, it's hard to judge the distance for the body cam. And but at either point, whether they had the opportunity to go taser first or not, once you see a lethal threat, whether it's a guy flicking a knife or whatever, you are completely authorized, if it's reasonable, to go lethal. There's no argument in my mind, at least anyhow, for waiting to go lethal if there's a lethal threat, right? So so taser, of course, would be good for before that time where you had that lethal threat. I like the fact that they actually had a less lethal and a lethal, because the only time they have a taser there with a dude with a knife is if you have a lethal backup, you know, that can neutralize that guy before he gets to you, because you know you're relying on a taser and a moving target, and that's not a good scenario to be in. So, but any other commentary, guys? Or
yeah, it's good point, Chip. My thinking is when it comes to non-lethal deployment, in this case being the taser, less lethal, that type of device could be considered, or I should say less lethal, you know, it's using force, can de-escalate the situation. So in other words, when you have the shooting officer, right, talking and communicating and getting him to drop the knife, we're here to help you, et cetera, at the same time, you could actually ask the taser, okay, look, you know what, go ahead and tase him, tell him it's going to hurt, give him the warning, do what you got to do. And perhaps by deploying the tasers before engaging in deadly force, maybe that might de-escalate the situation to where the knife is, out of his hands. Who knows? The fact of the matter is that when you have a officer that's less lethal and one officer that's considered lethal, and you really don't have any guidance or command and control besides just the officer, because a supervisor is not there, there's just a lot of explaining to do, and hopefully you can justify your actions.
Yeah, and you know, I remember on this one, I'm going back to my notes here, on this one, we got the suspect armed with a knife in each hand, threatening self-harm. He was asking the cop to drop the taser. That was a request that he made. And okay. And so he was asking the cop to drop the taser. And so I know the cop was responding back and saying, well, look, I'll drop the taser if you put the knife down. And I have to, in all honesty, I've seen videos to where shotgun beanbag rounds, these are all less lethal, or tasers have actually done the opposite. They have aggravated the bad guy to where he just simply charges at that point too. And the officers that are more on the scene, it could be the where they thought, look, the guy was freaking out so much about the taser I was waiting to deploy it because I felt like he might charge that. I mean, you know, there are some feeling there, for that, you know, who knows?
I agree. There's arguments from either side.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that.
Well, guys, we have just enough, 3 minutes in order to try to get to this next one. So if that's okay with you, we'll go with this next one. I'm going to cut it. I'm going to get through this in Houston really quick. Rumble.com. This is Butters, the channel. Houston officer shot and killed an armed suspect after a confrontation that's at a crash site.
What was your intention? You didn't want to provide any information. You know, it's state law to do that, right? What did you hit?
Final update on the...
All right. I'm not going to debate about it with you, okay? What we're going to do is we're going to put you in handcuffs. We're going to put you in the back seat. We're going to move your car over there with the other two cars that are about to crash, okay? Hey, whoa, whoa, down. Shots fired. 2321.
So Houston, Texas. So our bad guy's name is Michael, Dzik. You know, it's a really hard name to pronounce. He's dead. So he's not even alive anymore. But here's what happened. So there's a crash scene on the North Freeway. Cops get there. The two people that are involved in the accident say there was a third car that caused the accident that left. So another cop, going off the description of this third vehicle, the green SUV, he finds this guy parked in like a parking lot. The guy appears to be drunk, and so they confront this guy. They got the driver's door open. He's still sitting in the driver's seat. You got two officers, and I tell you, the main officer, he's a young dude, because when they showed the body cam of the other officer, this kid is young. And so sure enough, the officer tells this guy he's going to put him in handcuffs and they're going to take care of his car and stuff. But, you know, there's always, you know, and you get that with experience. Sometimes you just don't volunteer too much information to a bad guy because things can go south. So now the guy knows he's going to go to jail. He's going to be handcuffed. So what you do, lifts up a shirt, he goes for the gun. And now we have a lethal situation. So there's a shooting. The kid that had told the young cop that had told the guy that he's going to be handcuffed, now he ends up having to shoot and kill the guy, and they pronounce him dead at the scene. So that's the way it goes down. We got about a minute and a half. Marlon, when you want to start us off?
Yeah, all I got to say is that, you know what, when you're doing your compelled interview or, you know, any interviews with internal affairs or the DA's office, always say, hey, this is a good shoot, but... And you had to explain yourself. Look, anytime, this is the importance when people say, we were taught, hey, let me see your hands. Look, you're reaching for your waistband and you start pulling up and you see a handgun, all bets are off, man. You gotta engage in deadly force. That's my take.
Yeah. And look, I know it's easy, the Monday morning quarterback. I was a cop for 30 years. I tell you one thing, I learned to get very stingy. Look, there's no law against lying for cops. So what I'm saying is that you don't have to volunteer all this information, tell the bad guy that you're going to put him in handcuffs and he's going to go to jail. Get him to come up and say, dude, I just need to talk to you. Just hop out of the car. I'm going to cut you loose in a second. You know, you never know. I mean, this guy's obviously, you know, it seems like he's under the influence. So he's automatically worried about that. He knows he's got a gun in his waistband. You don't know at the time. But you know, I'm just saying, always contemplate doing things differently. There's a lot of bad guys that do bad things once they know that their life is over with and they're going to go to jail. But it's been another great show. Jim, from Tampa Polygraph Services. And hey, he's a guy you want on your side, by the way. And also Marlon, the IA guy, Marachi. Thanks so much for being on the show, gentlemen. We appreciate it. And the IA guy, you can find him on YouTube as well. I think you said Instagram. Is that right? Instagram was the other outfit. Excellent. And I used to take this opportunity to talk about the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Randy Sutton's 501c3 that's helping cops out in the world of hurt that are suffering from things like PTSD and other issues. And, you know, they also, it's just a great organization. I support them financially monthly. And, you know, I don't have to worry about them embarrassing me like I do with some other organizations. So the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org, it's really a great, reputable organization. And, guys, I'm going to mention our sponsors again. Please support our sponsors. They go to great lengths to make this show available to you guys. And, hey, radio is not cheap. It's an expensive option and being on satellite as well. Galls.com, our title sponsor. ComplianceTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor. JohnLearn.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.life, and Safeguard Recruiting. Thanks to them, we're streaming the 1.5 million. And also, Two Bells have built a new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. Hope everybody has a wonderful and a safe rest of your day. We'll see you back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern.